Hello, welcome to episode 31 of The Bitcoin Game. I'm Rob Mitchell. I ran into Valerian Bennett at a number of Los Angeles Bitcoin meetups in 2014. I thought he disappeared from the Bitcoin scene, only to realize how wrong I was. Valerian has taken his experience in mainstream television production and combined it with his passion for Bitcoin to create several online Bitcoin video services with partner payment channels developer James Poole. It was great to catch up with Valerian, and here's our conversation. I'm trying to think. I'm sure it's only been at meetups I've seen you a few times.
Yeah, probably.
Did you record an Andreas meetup?
Yeah, actually, I think that was the first thing I recorded in the Bitcoin video world. I live and work in Los Angeles as my day job's as a video editor. I've done music videos mostly. Now it's reality TV. But I'm originally from Northern California, from San Jose. So it's, you know, heart of Silicon Valley. So I've always had like geek sort of around my head. And I had heard about Bitcoin, like most people, just kind of dismissed it the first few times.
Where did you remember hearing about it at first?
I heard about it in the context of Mt. Gox, which in my head at the time was Magic the Online Gathering trading cards. And I just thought Bitcoin was the currency for this game trading. And since I didn't play the games, it didn't make any sense to pursue it any further. So completely dismissed it. Once again, in 2013, that big run up, the whole Cyprus debacle. So this was maybe like 5 or 6 months later. And the first thought was like, okay, this thing is still a thing, which is crazy in and of itself. So I was like, okay, the next time I get a break from a television show, because, you know, in this industry, you sort of work on a show for like 4 or 5 months, you get like a month off, you work on another one, and on and on and on. So it was like, okay, next big break that I have, I'm going to like really try to learn about this, because clearly there's something there. So I did, and after a few weeks of just really, really getting into it, I was like, okay, I get it. This is, and of course, like most people, they swallow the pill, they get bitten by the bug, they're like, oh my God, I have to do something. And since I can't code, I can't program, the thing I can do is, you know, make visually interesting things, television and videos, things like that. So it's like, okay, I'm going to go to my next meetup, videotape it, and maybe edit together something in a way that me being a newbie, if I can understand it and put it out there, then maybe someone else new coming into the whole thing can understand it as well. That first one happened to be the LA Bitcoin meetup with Andreas Antonopoulos.
That was very fortunate. What's funny is you only posted that maybe a couple of videos. You find that on YouTube, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I thought, oh, I guess Valerian just kind of gave up on the whole video Bitcoin thing. I haven't really followed what you were doing, but I somehow came across the protocol.tv and then the newer project. What's that called?
That's called PopChest.
PopChest. That was it. Someone referenced PopChest and then I saw your name with it and then I saw your name with it. I was, oh my. So he is really, he's extremely active. I just don't know it. And, you know, it's funny. Just judged everything by your YouTube channel. So
yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like, once I put that video up there, I saw that there was just a lot of interest, right? So it was, you know, a very good-looking video, very professional, anything that you'd see on, you know, from any sort of high-end conference, but it was just at our local meetup, right? So the feedback that we got from that was like, okay, there's an audience out here that just isn't being reached, isn't being serviced. And it's funny, if you go back through YouTube and just, you know, search Bitcoin, you'll see like there's all these videos with massive amounts of views from about November 2013 to about January 2014, where there was that big run up to 1100 and then crash down to whatever it came back down
to. Is that the Bitstamp price?
Whatever the...
Because Mt. Gox got over 1200.
Yeah, it was the... whatever the high for Mt. Gox was, it's directly proportional to the amount of video viewership that was going on. But then once that whole thing died down a little bit, it seemed like, A, no one was watching much. And then more importantly, no one was really producing as much.
So when was this first video with Andreas?
I think it was January of 14. So the kind of operating thesis I had was, okay, well, these eyeballs haven't gone anywhere unless, you know, every Bitcoiner just happened to die. The interest is out there somewhere. So maybe if we just start making more interesting videos, we can slowly start to get people to come back, bring some awareness to what we're doing. And then when the price goes up again and people get more interested, then they'll be like, oh, look at this big giant library of interesting things I can watch and help learn from and so on and so forth from there. So that's how the whole thing kind of started.
What were your first steps after, obviously it wasn't going on YouTube anymore, what was your next step?
The interesting thing after starting to make videos was, of course, you know, you just want to make more, right? Once you make one, then you get some feedback, and then you want to make another, and so on and so on and so forth. The summer of 2014 was the World Cup in Brazil, and I'm a big soccer nut, USA soccer groupie, so I was planned my life for the previous 2 years about spending a month in Brazil for the World Cup.
Wow.
In June of 2014. So I did that. And at the same time, obviously, next door is Argentina. And so this trip of going there, as well as just kind of knowing what was happening with Bitcoin in Argentina, I thought, well, this is a great opportunity to make a short documentary about all the things Bitcoin related that was happening in Argentina at the time. They had a currency crisis. They were on the brink of default on their loans. So there was a lot going on in the bigger sort of economic picture. And as all of that was going on, Bitcoin was getting some traction, not only in the usage there, but a lot of development was coming out. In particular, there's an outsized level of development in Bitcoin coming from Argentina than there was relative to populations for the rest of the world. So a lot of what came out of BitPay's copay application there, multi-sig. Manuel Arauz is one of the Bitcoin core devs who was working with BitPay, did a lot of work on multi-sig and really was like one of the people driving forward the sort of growth in multi-signature wallets.
And just curious, I'm trying to think of that name. What other projects is that?
Streamium is the most recent one.
Okay, so he does the
proof of existence.
That's what I was just, yeah. I just used that last night.
Yeah, so many building blocks coming out of Argentina. BitPagos, which is one of the services that are kind of, think of them like a reverse BitPay, where rather than people get, they basically get paid out in Bitcoin, because in the local currency, the Argentinian peso, its value decreases so rapidly, so people want to get out of it as quickly as possible. And their service allows people to get paid and then ultimately get paid out in Bitcoin. So I thought, okay, well, it's a short plane ride back. I'm going to have to spend, you know, go from down here all the way back to Los Angeles one way or the other. Why not, you know, spend a few extra days in Argentina? So I made a short film called Bitcoin Buenos Aires, which we premiered at Cryptolina in the North Carolina Bitcoin Conference a few months later. And the problem I was having, and this kind of leads us into PopChest, the problem I was having was, okay, I made this, 12, 14, 15 minute video, which is a substantial effort. It's not a mass market thing, but people who are interested are going to be interested in it. So I could put it on YouTube, but it really doesn't reflect the value that, one, I see in this, as well as the value I think the people who would watch it would get out of it. So how do I extract the value from what I've created, right? So the problem is, okay, well, can you use PayPal? Do you just throw it on YouTube and put a bunch of ads in and like, duh, we've got Bitcoin, right? Shouldn't you be able to, you know, pay me a quarter, 50 cents, a dollar, whatever it was that we ended up, you know, charging for it. I think it was $1.99, something like that. You know, let's actually try to use the technology to be able to tell people about the technology, right? It kind of naturally makes sense. So when I started looking out, okay, what are the services that I can do this with? How is it possible for me to actually, as just a guy, not a super geeky tech guy, how can I actually make this work? And there really wasn't anything out there. So I ended up cobbling together a bunch of different things which weren't very secure, that kind of used one of the payment processors to allow you to just download the video. So I kind of got through it, but at the end of that, I was like, there's just gotta be a better way. As the artist, I want to basically YouTubeify it as much as possible. So working in the entertainment industry, the thing I know from firsthand experience is the most creative people are generally the least technical people, right? So you hit export on your Final Cut Pro or editing application, and that's pretty much as hands-on that a lot of people want to get. And YouTube, for example, makes it really simple, right? You can export straight to YouTube from most, you know, video editing applications or something like that. You don't really need to know about encoding. You don't need to know about bit rates. You don't need to know about, you know, which browser supports rich format, so on and so forth. So we're thinking, okay, how can we make it easy for content creators as well as easy for viewers on the other end as well? I got to the point of being frustrated and not having a system where I could just easily monetize my videos. So that's when I started doing a lot more research in terms of micropayments to see what other systems were out there, what parts of the Bitcoin protocol could be used, whether it's payment channels, how far away something like Lightning Networks was. Basically talk to anyone who was doing anything with micropayments on Bitcoin Talk and just, you know, pinged people, asked a lot of questions. And that's where I ended up meeting this guy, James Poole. And he did the first, you can go back to on YouTube and check it out. He did the first actual live demonstration with content using Bitcoin payment channels, where you basically pay into a multi-sig address.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, go for it.
Because I first heard about payment channels when Paul Poy spoke at Gem for one of the meetups.
Yeah.
And I had actually asked a question, like, because his whole thing was the future of Bitcoin wallets and stuff. And I was like, but people weren't talking about Lightning Network yet. And I was just like, how do we scale, basically? And he's like, well, some guys in San Francisco just talked about this new implementation of payment channels. And so I started Googling. I think maybe it was James Poole. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
I remember he had an early thing on payment channels. So is this what you're talking about? Okay.
Yeah. You know, once I started to get in more into his work, he'd done a bunch of different experiments and a couple of plugins and a few.
Let me stop you right there.
Because
I tried to follow that video and it was pretty, okay.
Right.
You're able to technically follow the details of the payment channels? And
yeah.
Everything? Okay.
Yeah. So basically think of it like a prepaid account, right? Where you fund an account and for everything that you get, something gets debited from that account. And big picture, that's how it works. So,
and but he got really technical, right? In that video?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a Bitcoin program.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, I followed the amount you just told me, but in that video, he got really deep. And I don't know if I really listened to the whole thing or is that this is not at my level.
And now you see why we make such good partners. So he'd done a bunch of different things as well. He'd done some things with a text-based paywall where someone could read half of an article, decide if they want to watch or view the rest, pay into an address, and then the rest of the thing gets released. So my thinking was, okay, he's built this part and he's built this part. And I think if we kind of put a few things together, we can kind of get to the idea where what I was originally going for, and just reached out on Twitter and sparked up a conversation. And then we ended up putting our brains together and deciding to, one, initially make something just so we could use, right? We were trying to solve the original problem that I was having, which was, I have a video, how do I allow other people to pay me for it? And then we did a video with Adam Draper. I had gone to Cryptolina, as I said, and debuted Bitcoin Buenos Aires. And we did a few interviews while we were there. And we did this great interview with Adam Draper. It's like, I want to say like close to a half hour. I was, wow, this is like a really good interview. I can't wait to put this out. And we put it out and we got a good response from it. And the even more important thing that came out of that was we got a lot of people starting to ask, how can I use that for my videos? So we started to get a lot more interest from outside parties, from third parties looking to use the technology. And that's when we were like, oh, we should probably just make this standalone technology just by itself so anyone can use it, whether they're into the Bitcoin universe or not. And that's how PopChest was born.
I was really curious when I saw you were involved with a few things that seemed to have to do with direct payment for videos. So, I mean, you'd mentioned Streamian. I know there's Watch My Bit. You have your Protocol TV and PopChest. I mean, are you able to kind of tell me what similarities and differences there are for all these?
Sure. The way I understand it, Streamium is live payments for live video. So if you want to watch me doing something, let's say teach a class, consulting in some sort of way, we have a rate that gets paid back per, I believe it's per second, as we go along.
So my head immediately went to porn when you said that.
Is cam girls, I believe.
Cam girls.
The technical term.
I think for so many reasons, Bitcoin makes sense for when you want to pay for something that's not illegal or legal, but not illegal, let's say, but you don't really want to declare to the world, yes, Visa, I watch Cammy the Cam Girl. or whatever it is. So that's always seemed like a real opportunity to Bitcoin that I feel like hasn't been, you know, pushed enough. But then I hear this end of it too. That seems like a really good fit for that type of stuff.
Right. And one of the really cool things about it is since it makes use of Bitcoin payment channels, there's a trustless element to it, right? So if I put in my payment and you can see that I put in my payment, you as the provider, let's say me as the consumer, we know that there's no way that I can then run off with the funds. I can't scam you for anything, right?
So you're talking about PopChest or Streamium?
Streamium, yeah.
So they utilize something like payment channels right now?
Yes, they are using payment channels right now. So that way, the worst that can happen is if our connection dies, then the last refund transaction goes back. So I get refunded what I haven't spent. You get the money that's committed to you, and there's basically no need to for me to trust you or you to trust me, which is one of the great promises of Bitcoin.
So I guess I'm not even sure I understand. Like in my head, I would think, okay, basically you're just sending them some Bitcoin and then whatever doesn't get spent gets returned. But it's not. It is as simple as that, basically?
It's simple as that.
I mean, I guess there's some things I don't understand enough with payment channels, how that's a trustless situation.
Right. And you can start to see why we decided not to use it initially for PopChest, just because it's complicated still, right? As a viewer, you have to understand a certain amount of things with the Bitcoin protocol. As the content creator, you also have to understand a whole lot of things. And that's after you get comfortable with Bitcoin in and of itself. So a lot of them are technical problems that still need to be solved with payment channels, but a lot of it's just psychological, right? A lot of it's just educational. A lot of it's just getting people comfortable with doing things in a whole new way that they're just not accustomed to yet.
So do you think that covers basically what Streamium is?
Yeah.
You want to get on to some of the others?
Yeah. So there's Watch My Bit. As far as I know, that's the only other, you know, let's call it video on demand platform. I think the ideas that we have between us are pretty similar in terms of where we want to go to, which is basically just to allow content creators to get paid for their work. Right? Pretty simple, I think, laudable goal. I think the way we go about it is different from a few different sort of technical implementations.
And when you say we're talking about PopChest.
Yes.
You want to talk about the differences?
I think one of the things that is important to us with PopChest is to try to take advantage of all the things that the Bitcoin protocol allows you to do that's different than what we've had before Bitcoin was invented. So to take it into the Andreas Antonopoulos maxim, you know, Google has a maxim, don't be evil. Andreas Antonopoulos has a maxim, can't be evil, right? So we've constructed our system in a way that we never hold your funds. So as a artist, as a viewer, that transaction is truly between you two. We found a way to be able to monetize that, but the important part is we don't really hold anyone's money. So that makes it so that we can't get hacked, we can't get your funds frozen, we can't just run off with anything. Not because we're evil and would do any of those things. It's just that if you don't allow those things to be possible, they can't be done.
Okay, so let me just ask you, when you say you can't get hacked, there's no way someone could tweak the code somehow that's powering the transactions to do something other than what it's supposed to do? Or
okay, let me go back. Let me just be super, super clear. Because when you say can't be hacked, that's like an invitation for people to try to hack you. But the point is that we're not custodians.
Okay.
Right. We don't hold anyone's funds in the way that, you know, Mt. Gox held people's funds. And, you know, look at the litany of the, you know, evolution of Bitcoin companies. You find that generally the companies that hold the most funds are the ones that get hacked, right?
Sure.
So if you can't hold customer funds, one, it's safety for your viewer, it's safety for your content creator, it's safety for us. But really, it's safety from all the legislation that you have to deal with if you are a custodian of funds. So
sure.
We just try to avoid that altogether and that regulatory burden that comes with it. You know, the things that we're really trying to do, you know, we can sell movies. For example, we did Bitcoin, The End of Money, the documentary that just came out a couple of months ago. And that was, I think, our highest priced product so far, which was $5.99.
Oh, that was cheaper than some other places.
Yeah, which is the whole point, right? You pay in Bitcoin, you don't have the service fees that go with it. The payments go directly to the artist so they can charge less. Really, the opportunity that we see is to be able to do things that the other platforms can't do. The you know, iTunes and Amazons of the world, and they can't charge a quarter for something. They can't charge 49 cents for something because that would just get eaten up in credit card processing fees, right? So what we're starting to see is content creators that have a niche audience, you know, they have the followers, right? And they're doing something that everyone can see. That's actually pretty cool. That's nice. It's enjoyable. It shouldn't be free, but since we have, you know, advertising, it kind of is, but it doesn't really cover the cost of really making it. And it really doesn't, as a viewer, it doesn't allow you to express your appreciation to the person who's making this thing for you. So we see people offering stuff for 25 cents, for 50 cents. I think that's where the opportunity with us in particular and Bitcoin in general is to do things that the other systems that exist just simply can't do.
So it seems like a really huge score that you partnered with James Poole. I mean, someone who's obviously, I guess, somewhat of a leader in payment channels.
He's the brain.
That's pretty exciting, I think.
Yeah, I lucked out. Not only A, that he was willing to do it, but B, you know, we've been working together for almost a year now. It's just our personality sort of, you know, balance out, if you will.
So how long did it take to come up with your own launch of the product, to come up with the product that everyone else can use?
From the time we actually said hello to the time we had something that was working was about 6 months. You know, the first few months are just back and forth of getting to know each other and then kind of getting to the point of saying, okay, let's do this thing, then actually doing that one thing.
So if you were to try to guess, how many hours of, hey, let's chat, let's talk about what we want to do, and then how many hours of actual, hey, we're coding or really putting our heads to doing this?
I have no idea, but really that first part of actually deciding that you want to do something with someone, that's a pretty significant hurdle, right? You're literally just kind of opening up an email and deciding, hey, I want to spend this next amount of time, this next month, this next 6 months, year with this person. It's funny because I got married this past year, and I feel like I got married twice in a certain way, because, you know, when you start a project like this and you're basically, you know, with a co-founder relationship, it's a very unique relationship that you share in your brain in terms of trying to make something that doesn't exist.
Do you still need last-minute Bitcoin stocking stuffers? If you're listening to this a few days before Christmas, there's still time to order the well-known Bee Keychain Bitcoin Keychain or the Quirky Bitcoin Fork Pen, both on Amazon.com. Amazon Prime members get free shipping. You'll find a link in the show notes, or just go right now to bit.ly/Bitcoin gifts. That's bit.ly/Bitcoin gifts. Who are you with The Protocol TV, and what is that?
So now The Protocol .TV has evolved into a video content site related to Bitcoin, but there's a bigger thing that's happening, whether it's with blockchain technologies, whether it's, you know, our refocus on privacy. It seems like there's a lot of different things from a lot of different elements, but they all sort of fit together. And if we can build on Bitcoin, we can build on blockchain, we can build on privacy, I think we're going to be able to be a gathering point for, if you think of what CNET was back in 1999, right? It was like, okay, there's videos about tech on the internet. It makes no sense. But that universe kind of grew up around them, except, you know, they had a really strong presence in the middle of it. So I think I hope that's what's going to happen with the protocol.tv, in particular with the content part of it, is that, okay, let's just make good content. The rest of the world, I think, will come around sooner or later. And we're starting to see that with this last big run up. We're starting to see that with the investment. Sooner or later, people are going to be like, okay, wait a minute, I should know about this. And the question is, okay, are they going to come to know about it by, you know, reading article after article after article, or are they going to learn about it and come to know about it just by watching someone? Most likely, I think it's going to be by watching someone.
Some of us like to listen to
them. And some of us like to listen.
Because I'm so busy, I rarely have time to sit down, I feel like, and watch or read, but it's so great to be able to listen while I'm doing something else. But the protocol.tv, is that free and paid content?
Yes. the idea is, you know, give people a sense of what they're looking for, and you know, once they get to that point where they find something of value, then we give them the opportunity to give us money for it. And there's this idea of the full stack startup. This guy Chris Dixon with Andreessen Horowitz talked about this idea of, okay, what if you had something like Uber, right? Which on the surface, Uber is a really cool taxi service. But if you think about it, you know, it's moving people with cars, right? But they can move just about anything. It doesn't have to necessarily be people. And what about if it's not cars? What if it's, you know, a self-driving car, something like that? What if it's a drone? What if it's, you know, you have this technology. So what if at the beginning of Uber, they said, okay, we have this really cool technology to move things around in an efficient way that no one's done so far. But we're not going to make it into a taxi service. We're going to go to the yellow taxi cabs in New York and say, please, please, please use our technology on top of your yellow cabs. Like, how would that have worked out? Probably not so good. So what they said was, okay, well, we have the technology side. Let's do the entire stack. We'll get the taxis, we'll get the people, we'll, you know, put all that part together, marry it with the technology, and control the process from end to end. It's a very Apple sort of way of thinking. And we kind of backed into thinking about that, right? So I started just wanting to make videos. Then I wanted to make videos where people could actually pay me for them. And then the technology that we developed to do that has applications well outside of what we're doing. So we're so early in the Bitcoin universe that when you say, hey, we have this payment technology with Bitcoin and you can use it, okay, Time Warner, use this system, they're going to give you a big fat middle finger. But if you can kind of demonstrate the entire flow to be that full stack, that in and of itself becomes a catalyst for other people getting involved and using our technology for their own means. You know, no one's ever done this before, right? We haven't had Bitcoin. How could you do this? So it's important to be able to say not only that this is what works, but just as important, this is how it works. And it works because we're actually making it work with real life content.
PopChest seems like it's a monetization tool for any genre, but the protocol doesn't sound like it's for non-technical stuff. So
for example, if you go to suchwow.tv, there's a woman named Laura Lopez, who's a filmmaker in Hollywood, makes awesome videos, makes funny videos, has a really niche following. It's not Bitcoin related, but she understands, like I hope a lot more content creators are going to begin to, she understands, hey, I can put my videos on YouTube and if they get 5,000 views, that's great. I might get, you know, $2 out of that. But if I put my video on my own site and allow people to pay me 50 cents, you know, if I have 10 people who pay me 50 cents, then I just made, you know, double plus what I would have if I got 5,000 people watching it on YouTube. So we're really able to change the economics just drastically in terms of the amount of people that you need to appeal to versus the amount of people that if they pay, give you a return that you're just not going to get using any other platform.
So let me be devil's advocate a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I've posted some silly videos that ended up getting hundreds of thousands of views, surprisingly. Or also just the ideas of wanting to expose people to your ideas or to your product or to you or, you know, your service, your talent, and just wanting people to stumble upon it on YouTube versus, you know, come searching to your website.
YouTube is definitely the best platform for discovery, but it's not particularly good at monetization for most content creators. The ones at the top are doing particularly well. I think the stat was 95% of the views go to the top 5% of content creators. And I think we can agree about what you're saying, which is there's a lot on YouTube, which, let's to put it nicely, is not monetizable, right? Mm-hmm. But I think there is a pretty big chunk in the middle, which is to say there's something of value that people just don't have a way of monetizing, right? And you see, I think you'll see that the platforms themselves acknowledge it when they start to do things like subscriptions, where YouTube Red just came out, where they allow you to, I think it's $10 a month or something like that to subscribe commercial free. We saw Vimeo a little while back. They had a tipping platform, which they've since discontinued, but it's an effort to try to help content creators get the value that I think a lot of us see that they deserve from what it is that they're doing. So basically what we're trying to do is change the economics, right? So if you look at a larger audience that has a per view that's fractions of a penny, if you can take a small percentage of that audience and turn them into paying customers, a much lower amount of people will be able to give you a much higher amount of revenue. And I feel like I need a whiteboard and I feel like we need to do math.
Today's magic word is video. V-I-D-E-O. Use the magic word to claim your share of this week's LTB Coin listener reward on letstalkbitcoin.com. Adam B. Levine gave a talk, I think it was called Why YouTube is Broken or something, where he had a whole deal. Wow. This is years ago. This is like, yeah, I don't know if it was at San Jose 2013. And he had this whole presentation about QR codes. You need to display a QR code every time you have a video so people can tip you, and every time will be a unique QR code, and so you can track it. And I was like, that's such a great idea. And I followed that religiously with my podcast.
Right.
And then one time I noticed he wasn't doing that. And he's like, oh yeah, I gave that up.
Yeah.
And his point, I guess just financially speaking, just the transaction fees, if you're only getting, you know, these, you know, fractions of a penny tips for each episode, and then when you want to spend them, and I have to admit, I don't know technically enough how the transaction fees, but all these different addresses combining them to send, you know, the equivalent of ends up being a dollar somewhere, ends up being a little chunk taken out.
Right.
So I just thought that was really funny. When he said that, I think I stopped for one episode and said, yeah, I'm not going to do this anymore. But then it's super valuable to me, more even if, you know, it's, I'm not getting those pennies or whatever, but just to see what resonates with people through tips, right. I guess.
Yeah.
So I found that really valuable.
Right. Yeah. The psychology of tipping is a really big thing. And I did a lot of research, particularly about tipping, because that was obviously one of the things that that's inspirational about Bitcoin, is being able to send micropayments. Nick Szabo has a seminal piece, The Mental Transaction Costs of Micropayments. And all the research that I went through, and a lot of it was from 1998, 99, 2000, you know, the first sort of wave of the World Wide Web, MIT, Stanford, Berkeley, so many different, you know, really intelligent people who basically gave you all the reasons why micro-tipping wasn't going to work. And it's funny kind of reading them now in the context of Bitcoin. You could see in their papers, they're like, well, this won't work, this won't work. Maybe if it could work, you would need some sort of universal currency that could just be sent over the internet with minimal fees, but that doesn't exist. So it's never going to work. It's never going to work. So the psychology of tipping, I think, is a lot more difficult to crack than any of the technical elements, whether it's putting a QR code. You know, we did that, our first videos. If you go back to our first videos on YouTube, they all have Bitcoin addresses and QR codes. And just at some point, the work of putting QR codes in the video was not as valuable as just the actual what we were getting in return. And to your point of being able to kind of gauge the interest, you know, that's where, you know, all the analytics tools that we have from Twitter and YouTube and Facebook, and, you know, to me, that gives me a lot more information about what people are finding important, what people are sharing, what people are finding useful, more than I think the actual payment amount comes from.
So let me ask you about a different approach that I actually found super exciting, and that's ProTip.
Yes.
I mean, that seems like, rather than, you know, you and Watch My Bit and all these other platforms, it's a whole different approach where, you know, you can look at anyone's content. You don't need any kind of back end for all these individual systems.
Right.
And it just seems like a different approach that I thought was pretty exciting. Do you feel like an approach like that is almost kind of competition for your approach?
I, I don't think it's competition in the sense that it's a different mechanism. And I've been watching all of them closely. Pro tip, auto tip, ZeroClick. One of the people who's advising us, Ben Chan, is the guy behind ZeroClick. He's one of the lead engineers at BitGo. A lot of those are, I think what you're getting to is the in-browser payments. We've started to see the W3C start to kind of address this idea of in-browser payments, which I think are going to be super important. One, I think it's a different way of getting things that I think people aren't quite used to yet. The idea of, one, just automatically not having an active role in what you're paying for, at least at that level. When you start to get into the idea of people sort of keeping track of what they're getting paid for. And I think a lot of these systems, ProTip in particular, has worked on, okay, we're going to try to obscure that part of it. Because once you let people start to get math in their head, then that's when things just go off the rails. It's like, okay, am I paying 1 cent for this? Am I paying 0.5 cents? Okay, if I watch again or watch this next page, how much is that going to cost? That just basically goes down a road that no one wants to go down the road for. I think one of the good things about ProTip and what it seems like they're trying to do is just kind of obscure all of that. You have an amount that you're going to pay, what you view, what you go through, what you watch. The plugin takes care of all of that and then doles out on your behalf. So I think it's interesting. I'm curious more to see what the feedback is in terms of the user experience, much more than the actual technology, because I think the technology itself is great.
Seems like you've done a fair amount of travel related to Bitcoin. I mean, are you like speaking at conferences or getting content at conferences? Or are you just going all over at meetups?
To help me understand things, I definitely did a lot of travel. There was a contest a little while back. This was sometime in 2014 when Apple started to ban Bitcoin wallets. And there was a contest on Reddit, on the /r/Bitcoin subreddit, when it was a much more fun and light and loving place. There was a contest about, it was basically the Steve Jobs, the crazy video that he did. This one's for the crazy ones. And the contest was to make a video that used that Steve Jobs speech and put it to the context of Bitcoin, in the sense from Apple banning Bitcoin wallets. It was like, okay, how can you have this leader that you treat as a deity who's basically all about disrupting the status quo, and then here we are disrupting the status quo and you guys are shutting us down. It's like it's an incongruous sort of thought. So I made the video, won the contest, and I want to say I won like 2 Bitcoins or something like that.
Nice. And how much was it worth at that time?
I think I want to say it was still like $600, $700, $800 somewhere there. So it was like, okay, this is a gift from the Bitcoin gods. I'm going to go to the Toronto Bitcoin conference. And I want to say that was like April of 2014, something like that. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be great. The hackathon there is where the prototype for Dark Market, Amir Taki was there, made the prototype for Dark Market with the guys from Airbits. Initially. And that's what went on to become Open Bazaar. And just, you know, met a lot of people there. Guys from who I didn't know at the time were from Ethereum, who would go on to do Ethereum. I went to the Texas Bitcoin conference. I think I might have been a little bit before. At the time, I was just going around just to try to learn as much as I could, try to meet people as much as I could, and really to be able to, like what I was saying before, when you put a face to all the things that are happening, it makes it a lot more tangible. I travel much less. I think I probably went to 4 or 5 conferences in 2014. I think I've only gone to like 2 this year, just in the sense of I'm just kind of like busy building stuff now. So hopefully in this coming year, once we have the next iteration of Pop Chest coming out, over the next couple of months, then we'll have something more to go out and talk about in 2016. Although there are a couple of local things that I'm doing, particularly with the entertainment industry. And I don't know when this is going to come out, but December 1st, WeWork Hollywood, which is a co-working space, Hollywood Boulevard, heart smack dab of the entertainment capital of the world. We're doing a meetup called Bitcoin and the Blockchain for the entertainment industry. The idea being, okay, all of these technologies, people have been talking about mostly finance and banking and all that sorts of stuff, but the technology itself can apply to anything. And in the same way, my belief is that in the same way that the internet was a very niche thing until it changed everything, I think that's going to be the same with Bitcoin and the blockchain, where it's like, okay, that's nice. And then all of a sudden, just the fire gets lit and it literally has the capacity to change every industry on the planet.
When you were in Argentina, did you give you new insight on the problems people have there and Bitcoiners there and all that?
Yeah, I think Argentina was, it was really energizing for me. We in North America, we're in Los Angeles sitting here, it's, you know, sunny and 75 degrees outside. If Bitcoin doesn't work, you know, yeah, it would suck, but life will continue. When you go to Buenos Aires and you see the level of activity and development, as well as the projects that they're doing, in the context of the economic situation that they live in, if Bitcoin doesn't work for them, that's a whole different outcome, right? It's like the course of life changes when you don't have an outlet like Bitcoin. So I think things became a lot more real. Like, you can see like the consequences of having this technology either succeed or fail. So to me, it was really energizing, and knowing that, okay, this can have a real effect. If you can consider that and really treat it like that, I guess it instilled in me with the project that I want to do with PopChest. Yeah, it's about being able to make money with videos, but I think of just creativity at large. And a lot of it is constrained. It's constrained by industry, right? So it's like, I want to make something, but I can't really make money at it. So what I'll do is I'll make it in my spare time. I'll make it, you know, for free. And I may have a job as an accountant, or I may have, you know, a job as a window washer. What if you could actually make your passion your life? And I think that's a big human question. How much human energy is devoted towards our passion, and how much human energy is devoted towards the crap that we have to do because we have to do it because we need clothes and electricity and so on and so forth? What if you could turn that funnel towards putting your energy towards doing things that you're passionate about? On the balance, I think the world would be better off if we all did what we're truly passionate about. And if we could make it so that we can actually live while doing that, that's the thing that's going to make it sustainable. And hopefully, without sounding too flighty, that's what's going to change the world. More people doing what they passionately believe in.
So did you see it mostly filled with promise of what Bitcoin can do, or are people actively using Bitcoin today in Argentina?
I don't think they're using it as much as a lot of other people think, in the sense of just transactional. It's not like I was, you know, walking down, you know, one of the main avenues and having it be, you know, buy with Bitcoin in every door. But one of the things that they have in Argentina is the capacity in the underground markets to exchange local currency for US dollars. So as an American, I come with a $100 bill. If I go to a bank, you know, they're going to give me an exchange rate that I think at the time was about 6 Argentinian pesos for my $1. On the black market, which is literally underground, right? You go into a mall, you like go underground. You see me going into this in the short film. We actually took a spy cam down there, and they give you double the rate. The value of not having the local currency is so much more important. And those people know exactly what Bitcoin is. In the above ground markets, you don't see it as much. In the underground markets, they know exactly what it is. And you can see the direction that it's going.
Do you think of yourself as having two different projects or companies with PopChest and the protocol.tv?
It's definitely two different skill sets, but they're headed towards the same goal. You know, like I said, using that, the idea of the full stack startup, one of the ways that I helped wrap myself around the thinking of why I'm doing sort of, it seems like two different projects, is looking back at CNET. People think of CNET particularly as a website, but if you think back into the early days of the web, what they were doing in making videos and the website that they had at the time, no one was really doing it. Think of how much online video you watched in 1999. It's like just wasn't a thing. But what they did was develop so many different kind of technologies to do what they needed to do. And they ended up spinning out those technologies and having the content side being something that people were more excited about, that people know about, but no one really knows about the sort of the technology things. They ended up spinning out a lot of technologies throughout the years, and the technologies that they spun out ended up being infinitely more valuable than actual CNET as you think of it. Actually, Halsey Miner, the guy who created BitReserve, and now it's called Uphold. He was the founder of CNET back in the day. So they work together now. They may not always need to work together, but I think it's critical that they work together at least right now.
Are these like things that there's funding, or are you guys just doing this on your own dime, or how does that all work?
Up to now, we're entirely self-funded. So we're a Delaware C corporation, PopChest Inc. And under that is where the protocol.tv lives. So basically James Pulitt, my partner, he put the technology part of it in, I put the content part of it in, and we put it all together from there.
So you guys maybe are going to be looking for some kind of funding, or?
Yeah, I think once we get through our next level of development, as well as after the holidays, things just tend to die down for obvious reasons. Once we look into 2016 with the new launch of our platform, a lot more content, and once we really get our back end, you know, nice and smooth and have a good flow of content creators going through, then I think we'll be able to have a much firmer platform, much more traction to be able to look for outside funding to help us move to the next step. Because once we get this one done, then there's the next iteration and the next iteration. And then that's, to me, this is like, you can see the first part of it where it's like, okay, I can watch a video and get paid for something. Once we start to go two or three levels deep, that's when it's like, okay, we've got something entirely new here.
Do you have any idea how you go about the fundraising?
We just stalk everyone.
we'll be just talking directly to people. Hey, do you want to?
Yeah. And most of it right now is just letting people know that, hey, we just came out with this feature. Hey, we've got this thing going on. So, in my minimal experience of being a startup founder in the last 6 months, you hear the concept of investing in lines, not dots. So people like to see your growth. People like to see your progress. People like to see that you're still around, which is a lot more than you can say for a lot of the companies that got, you know, a lot of excitement when that price was at $1,000. But, you know, once it was like 200, it's like, okay, we're bored. We're moving on to other things. But to us, that was such a great opportunity because we just got a chance to build without all the hype and without, you know, all the sizzle, and just keep building the product, refining the product. And now we're getting to that point where I think a lot of Bitcoin companies are getting to that point where it's like, okay, the platform's more mature. It can stand the scrutiny of a non-Bitcoin audience, which ultimately, if we're going to be successful, that's the audience that we have to reach.
Do you feel fairly confident you're going to be able to raise what you need to move to the next step?
I think we're going to have a good product. What the market is like when we get to the point of fundraising is, that remains to be seen. I think the first sort of nibbles that we got in terms of fundraising, that's a different universe. And this is the crazy thing about Bitcoin. It's like it changes so quickly, right? So, we've seen over the last few months where it was, oh, no one wants to deal with Bitcoin. Bitcoin, don't say the word Bitcoin. Nothing involves Bitcoin. It's all the blockchain, right? Bitcoin is never going to do anything consumer facing. It's all just banks and back end and all that sorts of stuff. And in that sense, we're like, no, we need Bitcoin, the currency. Like that's what makes us work. So are we any less of an interesting business to content creators? No. Are we less interesting to investors who just hear blockchain, blockchain, blockchain? Probably so. But to me, that doesn't change what we're doing, which is we're just going to build something awesome. If we have enough people using it, people will come to us, right? If you make something successful, if we are successful, and this is the great thing about what we're doing, is that everything that we do is going to have a transaction amount with it. If we have a million people using our platform from viewers and, you know, 100,000 content creators, and they're serving a million views, all of those views people are paying for, right? So if we're successful, we're going to be making money. So it's just the question of how do you get people using the platform consistently month over month? And that's really what we're trying to focus on right now. If we're able to do that, then everything else will follow.
I can't help but wonder, is it something you think you could offer like as software as a service to other people who wanted?
Now you're getting to the fun part, right? So stage one, obviously, is doing what we're doing right now. People upload their video. You know, we put it onto our cloud. Someone takes a simple code that we give them. They can put it on their site. And that's how you view the video. It has the whole workflow, all the payment flow built into it. Simple, painless. The next level is, okay, what if you already have a website that has 1,000 videos, right? You're not going to want to upload them to our website. And we don't particularly want that or need that, right? All we really need to do is give you the capacity to have the Bitcoin payment workflow. So we can foresee ourselves building out an API that this allows you to, as a content creator, allows you to plug this payment technology into whatever platform that you've already have built. We don't need to reinvent the wheel, right? We look at something like BuzzFeed. I think the stat is something like less than 20% of all of BuzzFeed's views actually come from BuzzFeed. They come from Facebook. They come from Twitter. So it's not really important to us that you come to our site to watch content. At some point, we're going to have a portal so people can kind of see the things that they can view. But people are going to want to watch stuff where they want to watch it, how they want to watch it, when they want to watch it. And we want to be able to give those tools to any other video creator, any other content creator, any other video site out there. What's exciting me right now is just what we're starting to see the next level of Bitcoin. You can kind of trace it from the fringe to like, okay, this will never work. People are crazy. And then the sort of slow sort of drip of acceptance. And this past year, there's been, you know, $1 billion worth of investment. And we're seeing like all the big financial companies that said just months ago, never, never, this will never happen. Now they're just all in. So,
but they might have been saying that publicly, but had that little team experimenting privately. I have a feeling.
I have a feeling too. Yeah. So you're seeing that pendulum swing, particularly for the financial institutions, the financial system. So if you carry that forward to its logical conclusion, there's only just going to be more and more and more. So that's the exciting part for me. And just seeing that once people start to get that this is here, it's not going away, what else can happen? And then, you know, you start to do things like we're doing and, you know, try to break into reinventing the entertainment industry, reinventing all other industries. That's the exciting part. It's like, okay, we were promised flying cars. Okay, we don't have a flying car yet, but we kind of have self-driving cars, which is crazy, right?
It is crazy.
It's like, okay, the flying car is coming.
So where can people find your projects online?
If you're interested in Bitcoin, the blockchain, if you want to watch cool videos about that stuff, go to theprotocol.tv. For content creators, go to popchest.com. And we're really trying to get to this point where we become part of just content creators' workflows with video. So to have it be second nature that you put your video on YouTube, you put it on Facebook, and you have a Bitcoin micropayment option. We've seen people use it in a bunch of different ways. We've seen where someone will make a video, have it on their site using our PopChest micropayments for a week. And then a week after that, they'll put it on YouTube for free. We've seen people do it where they put the Bitcoin micropayment version on their site and still put it up on YouTube at the same time. And we've seen something where people are only offering certain videos using micropayments. People are using the technology in different ways. And for me, that's kind of the exciting part. It's like you make something and then, you know, people are going to do with it whatever it is that they want to do. And we're learning from that and really just trying to, you know, optimize and every 2 weeks sort of update the back end and try to take some of the feedback that we get to just keep making it better, making it easier, making it stronger, faster for everyone else to use. So popchest.com. Of course, for me, Valerian, that's pretty easy. So it's VALERIAN at either theprotocol.tv or at popchess.com. So not too many people named Valerian, I would hope.
Thanks for coming down to the dungeon. What do you think? Is it more or less messy than you imagined it would be?
Oh, no. This is the standard mad scientist man cave.
The conversation you just heard took place back in November, just to give it some context. Links to just about everything we discussed can be found in the show notes. You'll find all episodes of The Bitcoin Game at thebitcoingame.com. Find me on Twitter at TheBTCGame. If I don't talk to you again, best wishes for the end of 2015, and I hope somehow the world is a better place in 2016. One can dream. See you next time.